Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome. This is On Mic with Jordan Rich, another episode featuring conversation with creative people who have a lot to say and a lot to offer. All right, open up your ears and put on your glasses, because you'll want to listen and also take a good look at what we're talking about today. The Optical Heritage Museum, located in Southbridge, Massachusetts. It's dedicated to preserving the history of the optical industry from the 19th century to the present day. We have so much to talk about, and the perfect person to do it with, Debbie Shiro, the Executive Director of the Optical Heritage Museum. I believe this will be a bit of an eye-opener, as we invite her to join us right now on mic. I'm wearing my glasses. I love my glasses. I wear them everywhere I go, and I need them. But I also wanted to know more about the history of spectacles, so I've added somebody to my list of invitees. She is Debbie Shiro, as you heard. She's the Director of the Optical Heritage Museum. Debbie, one assumes there's a museum for everything. I guess there had to be one of these for that.
Yes, there is. And thank you, Jordan, for having us here. The Optical Heritage Museum houses everything you've ever wanted to know about glasses, from its inception to the industrialization to the geekiest geek information of technology, curvatures of the lens, standards, safety, as well as fashion. So we've got everything for your geekiest geek to your fashionista, including a Barbie exhibit.
Oh, let's talk about that in a minute. But let's explain where you are, because it's in Massachusetts. It's in a rather quaint little village. Where are you?
Thank you. We are at 12 Crane Street in Southbridge. The museum is about 7,000 square feet. We've been there for just a little over 10 years. And for those of you listening, you may know that Southbridge is also known as the Eye of the Commonwealth because of American Optical, which basically was the Google in its time for Southbridge.
Right, right. And we'll talk about Barbie, of course, but we'll also talk about Norman Rockwell and so many other things. But it's a fascinating history, a fascinating story. Let's talk about American Optical. When was that company formed, and what kind of impact did it really have?
Yeah, so American Optical, the history goes back to 1830, when it was originally a jewelry manufacturer or maker by the name of William Beecher. And back then, glasses were made by jewelry makers. Mm-hmm. It was not available to the masses the way it is now. It was very expensive. The frames were made of gold, and it was very meticulously crafted. So it started with a jewelry making endeavor, which then evolved to the industrialization of glasses through American Optical. It was eventually taken over by the Wells family.
Mm-hmm. And there's a whole list of accomplishments, achievements, and scientific breakthroughs that the museum highlights,
yeah.
I guess.
It's incredible. It's incredible. There are so many firsts that have come out of Southbridge invented by American Optical. You know, the first laser to hit the moon, the first moon glasses worn by astronauts, the birth of fiber optics, the first implantable pacemaker. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I've got, you know, 50 pages of first. But I think what's fascinating is that, you know, what might not seem as such an interesting subject matter is absolutely fascinating when you understand the technology that goes on behind it.
Well, everyone knows the famous pictures of Ben Franklin with his spectacles, right? And that was even before American Optical existed. But when you're talking about the fact that it was jewelers who made these devices and they were for just the elites, I mean, you think about today, everyone on the planet has access, for the most part, we hope, for some kind of eye care. Let's talk a little bit, Debbie, about some of the really cool exhibits. I was drawn to, I mentioned him earlier, Norman Rockwell. I'm always drawn to Norman Rockwell. Did he actually have a connection to Southbridge at one point with American Optical?
He did. He painted a few industry paintings of opticians fitting glasses on kids. And that was a big deal because glasses really didn't become available to kids until the industrialization and manufacture of glasses. So I want to say it was in the 1920s or 30s that children actually started wearing glasses. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now there's over 165 million people that wear glasses. And if you ever wanted to truly understand how that came to be, how it became industrialized and available to the masses, including children, you would learn all of that from the museum.
The importance of technology from this one company is spelled out, I guess, Debbie. During World War II, employees of this company, according to the website, were exempted from the draft. Why were they exempted from the draft?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm assuming that, and I hope I'm not speaking out of school here, but I'm assuming that they had such a niche intelligence that was necessary for this country and the world as the global supplier of glasses. So I imagine that the scientists and the manufacturers of this was providing the service to the world.
And also bomb sites, I read. They were involved in creating the kinds of, weaponry that allowed us to defeat the Nazis. So that's a pretty impressive feat.
Yes, and I believe it was actually the curvature of the bomb that they worked on. So some of those things definitely had a different impact on the world. But yes, in fact, I believe laser optics started in Southbridge because of the CIA.
Wow.
There's so many stories. There's also forensic solves from the FBI due to glasses and prescriptions and all of that.
You mentioned the moon. Let's go up to the moon now, can we? First of all, you mentioned the laser focusing on the moon. That was interesting. But what about these glasses that the astronauts took up with them?
Yeah. So certainly it wasn't sunglasses, but they were moon glasses for the glare of the moon. And American Optical supplied that kind of safety eyewear, the protection, to the astronauts. Hmm. In fact, this is a little bit macabre, Jordan, but I think it's a good story. John Kennedy, who was a big fan of AO glasses, actually ordered 3 pairs of glasses, and they were received on the day that he was assassinated.
Oh, wow.
And we have that letter in the museum.
That's, again, a little chilling, but it's happening, and it's history, and it's history coming alive. That's incredible. I imagine there have been tons of famous folk, leaders and actors and sports heroes, who have worn the glasses of AO over the years.
All the like, you know, as you say, everything from people that might remember Dorothy Hamill and Arthur Ashe, you know, from the 70s, to Tom Cruise, to Robert De Niro, and most recently, Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer was wearing AO glasses.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that would make sense. They were period piece glasses, and they had to be the right kind. Who was the first lady of optics? It's listed on your website in the exhibits.
Oh, is that Estelle Glancy?
Yeah, tell me a bit more about her.
So, you know, she kind of reminds me of the women from the movie Hidden Figures.
Mm.
So she was a female scientist, the only one that was in the boardroom that worked along Tillier. And they had made major breakthroughs in terms of improving eyeglass wear and the fit and the radius and how the lens is actually projected. Mm-hmm. What's fascinating about her, aside from the fact that she was a female scientist back in the day when there weren't any, she was also extremely deaf.
Mm.
And they said that from that handicap, she was probably able to really focus in on her work. So Estelle Glancy is really a major pride for AO,
mm-hmm.
Having a woman of that caliber and the contributions that she's made in terms of patents.
Well, the contributions go well beyond just the pairs of glasses and the spectacles, what you will. There's something called the lensometer, I'm guessing, 100 years since its introduction. And I have no idea what it means. I'll have you describe it. But it's a huge step forward in ophthalmology, I guess.
It is. So believe me, I don't think most people outside of the industry even know what a lensometer is. But we were actually honored last year for this invention. And there weren't, I believe there were only 50 notable technological advancements, and this was one of them. So basically, the lensometer helped industrialize mass production of glasses. So when glasses are actually made and you get a prescription,
mm-hmm.
the lensometer actually accounts for whether it's accurate or not. And believe it or not, it's still used. That technology is used today still. So the glasses that you're wearing, Jordan,
mm-hmm.
probably went through a lensometer to make sure that the doctor that prescribed you that prescription was accurate in terms of what the output was.
Well, I have to thank him, and I have to thank AO for the lensometer 100 years ago. That's great.
So we have the largest collection of lensometers in the world. We have an entire room dedicated to it.
You mentioned style, and of course let's talk about Barbie because we have to. But you mentioned style, Deb, and glasses, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of like neckties. They are wide at one point. They're skinny at other points. They're in the middle at other points. Like fashion, they are trendy. Is that something that the museum catches?
100%. We have so much in terms of the evolution of frames and how they've evolved, including the lenses as well. You know, you mentioned Ben Franklin before and bifocals. I mean, back then they were basically like glued together.
Mm.
So imagine how the making of those lenses have evolved, but also the thickness. The biggest breakthrough, which you'll learn at the museum and also hear from this, is that most glasses before 1930, the temples were in the middle. If you think about the old frames, where the temple part
Yes.
was in the middle of the frame.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm looking at myself in the screen here, and I'm looking at my frames and the, what do they call this part of the frame?
The temple.
The temple. I should know that. I'm Jewish. I'm looking at the temples, which extend from the top of the glasses. You're saying they were from the middle of the glasses?
They were from the middle. And if you look at all the old glasses prior to 1930, they all sat in the middle. It wasn't until this major breakthrough called the full view, mm-hmm. where the temples were at the top, it actually sat on the bridge of the nose better and wrapped around the ears and just fit the face better. And, you know, they say that that major breakthrough actually kept AO going through the war, because that was a huge shift, if you could believe it, in design and production. Just that move of, you know, a half an inch up and how your glasses sit today.
You also have a sunglasses exhibition. And I've got to tell you a quick story. Years ago on air, I had a caller call in, an older lady who said she worked for a company that created sunglasses for the United States government, for federal agents. I said, oh, that's pretty cool. And I think you know the kind of sunglasses I'm talking about, that you look like an FBI guy. So she sent me 3 or 4 pair. I still have them and I wear them. The only cool thing I have in my life is these sunglasses. But tell me a little bit about the sunglasses exhibit at the museum.
Well, so it's interesting that we have sunglasses, not just the AO glasses that are rather famous and worn by many celebrities, but also Inuit glasses, right? How they were formed, and basically just the technology was they were just small slits on the front of the face to prevent rays from coming in at all angles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in its most basic form. But we do still, AO still is alive in Chicago, and we are still making sunglasses. A lot of the retro wear is coming back. As you were saying, ties get skinny and fat and skinny.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's coming full circle again to that cool look.
I have to ask you about one more thing. And there's, as you say, dozens of really novel things to talk about. Since I'm a movie fan, American Optical in the 1950s transformed cinema with its Todd AO film technology. Something I thought I knew a lot about film. I didn't know anything about this. What was Todd technology?
Jordan, you're scaring me because you're really doing your homework and testing.
Well, I had my glasses on, so I was able to read it all very clearly.
Well, Todd AO was a major breakthrough in cinematography because the wide screen movies that we see today, back then it was very difficult to do without it being in disjointed pieces. You know, it might have been in three different views,
mm-hmm.
if you will, on a frame. Todd AO was able to make it one smooth transition, and it was slightly curved to give that full wide view in a crystal clear image. And it was a major breakthrough then.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe around the world in 80 days, Hawaii all used Todd AO technology.
Interesting. Around the World in 80 Days. I remember that movie quite well with David Niven. And those were the days of CinemaScope and VistaVision and all that. I'm going to have to add Todd AO. That's really cool. That's very, very cool. I have one more question to ask. You know what that's going to be about because we've teased it the entire interview. Barbie, what does she have to do with the museum?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Dick and I were talking about, you know, the whole Barbenheimer weekend, right? And if we like the Barbie movie and if we like the Oppenheimer movie. And then we had the idea to do a Barbie display. And in all of the research, we actually discovered that Claire McCardle, who was an American ready-to-wear designer, and her stuff is featured at the Met now, actually partnered with AO back in the 50s to create a line of sunglasses. Now, the first Barbie was released in 1959 with the white cat eye sunglasses with blue lenses. And we thought, well, where did this come from? I mean, we know that cat eye lenses came out in the 1920s, but these, we believe, Claire McCardle influenced because she was the number one designer in the 50s and produced ready to wear, which is what this would have been. So we have the 1959 Barbie with the white glasses and how she's looked through the 60s, 70s, 80s to present day. So that was an interesting find because we weren't quite sure through all the research if we could find a connection point, and we did. So very excited about that.
A question for you. You're not wearing glasses at the moment. Are you? Are they there in front of you? You just took them off because you wanted to show off your beautiful eyes?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had a whole collection of designer frames, Gucci and everything. And a couple years ago, I decided to get LASIK because, you know, I would switch between contacts and glasses. And because I have severe myopia in one eye, it's very difficult to correct my vision to 20/20. I'm almost like a cyclops, if you will.
Oh, wow.
And it was only in one eye. So, you know, after many years of sort of this seeing an image, one slightly larger than the other, I decided to bite the bullet and do LASIK. But I do still wear sunglasses. These are more for anti-glare.
Yes.
And of course, I wear sunglasses as well.
Yes. Oh, lovely either way, with or without the glasses. So before we sign off here, we want to certainly let people know how they can find out more about the museum. I'll have you give the website. But you have been how many years now? 10 years in existence?
We've been 10 years at 12 Crane.
Mm-hmm.
I've only joined in the last year or so. And was in corporate before then, but I was so enamored with the museum that I thought, felt that I had to devote my life to it and really get the word out, because it is just a fascinating place to be. And I would really encourage folks, you know, if you have the time and you want to learn and you want to be completely blown away by what's happened here in Worcester County and in Southbridge, please come to the museum.
And you'll discover the eye of the Commonwealth when you get there. Absolutely.
You will indeed.
What is the URL? What is the website?
So our website is www.opticalheritagemuseum.com. We are at 12 Crane Street in Southbridge. And even if you forget all of that, you can put in Google, what is the best thing to do in Southbridge? And we will come up as the number one thing.
Well, I'm not doubting that for an instant. And this podcast goes all over the world. So folks, when you're traveling to New England, and many people do, put that on your list as another great stop to check out. And if you have any trouble reading a map, just get your glasses out and clean them. Clean your glasses once in a while. Debbie, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate your time and your attention to all this, and the love and passion you have for it. It certainly comes through.
Thank you so much, Jordan, and I really appreciate being on.
Thank you so much, Deb. Again, go to opticalheritagemuseum.com. Get all the details on this fascinating museum, opticalheritagemuseum.com. Thank you so much for subscribing and downloading this podcast. I hope you find them as much fun to listen to as I have producing them. Find out more at my website, jordanrich.com. Also check out chartproductions.com. That's my studio where all of these podcasts are produced. This is JR, as always, reminding you to be well so you can do good. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.